This recording is a production of the Conservative Anabaptist Education Committee. This presentation was recorded at the Conservative Anabaptist School Board Institute 2025, held at United Christian School in Napanee, Indiana, on February 28 and March 1, 2025.
I still recall the depth of discouragement washed over me when I exited the restaurant that morning. The breakfast meeting had been with a brother who had just spewed cutting words of criticism and contempt on the school or about the school and those at the helm, which of course included me. And I was just thinking to myself, I thought, wow, having him puke his breakfast on my lap would have at least given me the option to go home and change clothes and wash up a bit. But what do you do with spiteful words? What do you do when someone lashes out the way that I experienced that morning? Any appeal to him that morning to help be the change seemed to just run off his back like water off a duck's back. And no, instead, in my own words, what I heard him say is, get it figured out, and once you do, we might consider supporting again. And the trouble was that this was not the first of this kind of a conversation that I had of this nature. In fact, it took me back a year or two earlier when I had a similar encounter that ended up much the same way. And the trouble was, the reality was that we were at a very low ebb at school, the culture of our school. I was at a low ebb to know how to counter the culture that we were facing. And I'll tell you, the temptation to bail was very real at that point in my life. That was approximately 8 to 10 years ago, and it was a very discouraging time. Well, good morning. It's good to be here with you as part of the hosting community here. We welcome you. It's good to be here. It was mentioned that I am a pastoral rep here at UCS, and we extend a welcome to you all. It's been good to work along Bourbon Christian School as well in this endeavor. Being part of this community, I was tasked to address the topic, effecting change. And I want to begin by acknowledging the passage in Psalm 127, verse 1, where it says, unless the Lord builds the house, those who build it labor in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the watchman stays awake in vain. And the content of what I want to share with you this morning, what I felt God laying on my heart, starts from this premise. I want to be very emphatic about this. Regardless of the task that we are faced with, we must start, every work must start and end with Jesus Christ. Anything more or less is of naught. Unless the Lord builds the house, unless the Lord builds our churches, unless the Lord builds our homes and our schools, unless the Lord builds our businesses, they labor in vain and it is of naught. So I just want to again really reiterate and emphasize that it begins and ends with Jesus Christ, and it's from this premise that we anchor this topic. Any measure of success that you hear being touted this morning is motivated from this desire to labor in the work of the Lord and to let the Lordship of Jesus Christ have preeminence. Unless the Lord is at the helm, any effecting change will crumble. So I just encourage you to keep this at the forefront as we explore this topic. There's a little bit in question why I was tasked with this topic. I don't know if it trickled back to the committee that, UCS has had a reputation in the past hopefully has changed. I just want to say that whatever credentials that I have to address the topic has come from swallowing a good bit of humble pie and just from the school of hard knocks. And A healthy org should never feel like they have arrived, even when there are improvements. Further growth and health always must be in front of us. We never arrive, and we'll hear more of that. So the question we have this morning, the question that we want to wrestle with this morning is, how can change be implemented? And I want to give you four processes. It's not the only ones, probably, but at least I want to give you four of them. And the first one that we start with is that we need to embrace present reality. In the days following that encounter, breakfast encounter that I had with my brother, I had a reality check. Everything in me wanted to point the finger at something or someone other than myself. And I believe, you believe me, that I had a mental list of things that I thought contributed to where we found ourselves, that shaped our present school culture, that were not necessarily the bad leadership of the current board. I think probably most of you can identify with that, right? This is frequently the case when morale is down, because unhealthy cultures need to come to terms with the present reality. And unhealthy cultures in any institution does not happen overnight. There are typically factors that contribute to the unhealth of an organization, which leaders may assume when they take on the role of leadership. So I just want to acknowledge for anyone that would find themselves here this morning that current leaderships in dying or struggling institutions are not always fully responsible. I use that word fully, okay? Because you need to accept some responsibility. In fact, you need to accept a lot of responsibility, as we'll talk about. But you may not need to accept full responsibility of the current state. However, that doesn't change the fact that those in leadership, which in our case was our school board, needed to come to terms with our present reality because we were at the helm. We were given the mandate and the leadership responsibility. It was our responsibility to get this sinking ship figured out. In his book, Historical Drift, a subtitle, Must My Church Die? I read this quite a few years ago. Arnold Cook suggests that churches and organizations tend to follow a bell curve in any given life cycle of the organization or the institution. And he suggests that there are likely about seven stages to this curve. He starts out with the launch, and then there's momentum growth. He calls it strategic growth toward the top of the bell. And then there is sustained health. And I just want to make a note here that this sustained health is where, unfortunately, many board members want to be at. They think this is the sweet spot. But this is the very peak of the curve, okay? And it is short-lived, I would suggest. And then there's maintenance, there's perseverance, and there's life support. Regardless of where you find yourself on this curve, one thing is certain, and that is that vitality tends to be lost over time. The gap between both ends of this curve is measured by time. For simplicity's sake, I've reduced these seven categories to three simple steps, and I call it the incline, the recline, and the decline. Like it or not, the present reality that our board needed to come to terms with is that UCS was definitely in the decline, if not on life support, of the bell curve. And I don't think there's anyone here this morning, I don't think there's anyone present that likes to admit to that kind of defeat. Yet I would suggest that if there's any hope for effecting change, we this level of honesty is required. And the short list of our current reality as a board looked something like this. Patron support was low, almost nil. I mean, our support level was lacking. And even our annual school meeting that is held in July, I mean, we would just get a skeleton crew out and we were struggling with that. There was difficulty in finding staff and retaining long-term staff, good staff. And the student morale was alarmingly low. We were dealing with things among our students that we just couldn't seem to get on top of it. Our financial state, I would say, was on life support. It was tight and it squeaked and there was just no room to do much of anything, it seemed like. And possibly the most alarming one was that the board health vision was lacking, I think. And I don't put any onus on any one particular. It just seemed like we were at a loss to get beyond this hump. And I'm sure many of you know the gig. I'm sure many of you know about those 10:30, 11 o'clock meetings at night that just, most of the time is consumed in putting out fires. Brother John Miller, the ministerial rep that I served with for many years from the Sandy Ridge congregation, used to remind the chairman, he's at the beginning of the meetings, he said, now the Holy Spirit leaves at 9:30. But seriously, the energy that is sucked from you when you're in a defense mode leaves little room to build constructive vision. And like it or not, our energy seemed to be just consumed in putting out fires. That's where it seemed like we were. That was our present reality. So not only did we need to embrace our present reality, we also needed to embrace personal responsibility. Taking ownership of a failing institution can be both frightening and painful. Yet if there's any hope, I would suggest, for effecting change, it's an imperative step that we need to embrace. Nearly 7 years ago, the board instituted a new rhythm to include a state of the school address at our annual constituency meeting. And yours truly was asked to give the inaugural address. And I just like to read several sentences from the address that I gave to the skeleton crowd. And by the way, I chose those words carefully because it was truly a skeleton crowd. And here's what I said. I quote, "The board has identified that school morale has slipped into a low ebb the last several years. We are not pointing the finger or criticizing any person, staff member, student, or family. In fact, we take full responsibility. Perhaps it was our lack of vision that allowed us to slip into this level that we find ourselves, and for that we apologize. However, we have put forth a concerted effort to identify the areas of deficiency and have committed to raise the bar of excellence. By God's grace, we are committed to do what it takes to call out the full potential of our school and our students. Consequently, we have empowered the administration staff to make needed adjustments to attain Christian excellence. We see this rebuilding time as an opportunity to hit the pause button to evaluate what it is that we truly want to accomplish. If Christian excellence is the intended goal, then we must seek for ways to grow beyond mediocrity to achieve a positive school culture." End of quote. Now, I'm sure I felt the brunt of such honest transparency since I was the assigned spokesperson. But I was speaking for the school board. We agreed on this together. It was a rather humbling, but I believe sincerely that it was a significant point, turning point in our cultural shift. John Maxwell, and it was already mentioned this morning, something like this. John Maxwell says, everything rises and falls on leadership. And if his idiom is accurate, then boards and leaders of failing institutions must shoulder the current cultural state. We need to admit the responsibility rests with us to make the needed changes. And so it's probably a good point in our talk to talk about what fosters organizational drift. What fosters organizational drift? And there are multiple reasons, I'm sure, but let me at least give you two of them that I think are part of this process. I would suggest that one of the primary sources for organizational drift is leadership transition. Anytime there is a shift in leadership, the likelihood of organizational drift increases. This is true of churches, it's true of family businesses, and it's true of parachurch ministries, which, by the way, I would suggest is the very reason why board-governed organizations or institutions are particularly vulnerable, because there's an ongoing shift of leadership. It can easily, the vision can easily get lost. And it's also, by the way, why I am a proponent of longer terms for board members. I look forward to hear what Brother Matthew has to say, I think it's this afternoon, about board terms. Board terms, I believe, in my opinion, need to be long enough for the member to buy into the organization. A second reason that I would submit to you for organizational drift is a lack of ownership. Our family spent nearly 14 years in mission work, and our first assignment was at a station that had been in existence for over 35 years when we arrived. And the apartment that we moved into was on top of a garage that had been the maintenance building since the inception of the mission. And what I encountered when we moved there was 35 years of accumulated stuff that literally just allowed pathways in this shop, in this building. And I had no words for it. Now, I am not a collector of any, by any means. In fact, I'm probably over on the other side. I probably throw out too quickly. So, you can well imagine my assessment, and I probably, if I'd be honest, my depression when I saw this clutter in this room. And for the first summer, I'll tell you, a lot of my mission work was to declutter this place and this dump, literally. The local dump grew, and our room expanded. So what happened? Well, for 35 years, mission staff served on a 1 or 2 year commitment, and no one took ownership responsibility, right? No one took ownership responsibility. The short-term commitment, listen to this, the short-term commitment devalued ownership. And the accumulated clutter was the result. And I think the same thing can happen with board-governed institutions. If you want a healthy leadership, or if you want a healthy institutional culture, board members or leaders of the organization must assume healthy levels of ownership. I'm not talking about micromanaging, but they must assume healthy levels of ownership. I'm talking about healthy, hands-on leadership. Far too many board members that I've talked to only put in their time, and their heart's really not in it. But when you have a band of brothers in leadership who are committed to the cause, watch out, because something's going to change. Now, this step comes with a bit of a warning, because when you embrace your present reality and you embrace personal responsibility, You also need to be aware of the third process in this step, because you need to be aware, or you need to be ready to embrace potential resistance. It was of particular interest to me that the CASB committee framed the title with a verb rather than an adjective, and rightly so, I might add. Effecting means to cause something to happen or to bring about change. On the flip side, the adjective form, effective, I think I may have said effective first, effecting means to cause something to happen or to bring about change. The adjective effective simply describes a desired result, and there's a big difference. I appreciate the intentionality of this thought process. When an organization is on the decline or on life support, you need change, not just a desired result. You need change, by the way, which is why leaders ought to initiate vision on the front side of the curve rather than waiting till you're on the other side of the curve, right? And when waiting till the organization is gasping for breath. But regardless of where you find yourself on the continuum, the encouraging news is that organizational resets are possible. There's an alternative to organizational drift, and it's called the sigmoid curve. And I take this from Cook's book again. Cook derives this name from the 18th letter in the Greek alphabet, sigma. And the unique pattern of this dual curve moving in opposite directions reminds us that we are not at the mercy of the proverbial bell curve. We don't have to go down the other side of the curve. If vision is cast ahead of that time, there is an upward swing and a compelling vision. Bad cultures can be reset when boards or leaders of the organization cast a compelling vision. However, beware, because vision is frequently met with resistance, which is noted in the slight dip on the upward curve. Do you notice that? There's a slight dip in the upward curve. I've noted from personal experience, there's the potential for things to often get worse before they get better, which can be very discouraging and frightening, and it may generate some of those breakfast conversations that are not so pleasant. When finances are already tight and a significant donor is lost because they disagree with a new policy or a new board initiative that you've implemented, that cuts deep. That hurts. Or when a family pulls their children from school because of a line that is drawn in the sand, to be very honest, that stinks. Especially when student numbers are down already, right? But take heart, this is typically a temporary blip in the process, and I would challenge you not to waste adversity. The reality is that you may not get everyone on board initially when an upward curve vision is cast. Nehemiah certainly didn't when he went to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem, correct? Certainly not. But that's what distinguishes visionary yet humble leaders from passive ones. They are not stopped by adversity. Passive or indifferent leaders crumble at the face of adversity. If there's any hope for effecting change, you need to stay the course. You need to stay the course. Just as cultural erosion evolves with time, so does the rebuilding process. Now, I'm certain you're asking the question, well, how do you get buy-in from your people, your constituency, your community? And there's probably a lot of different answers for this, but let me at least give you two thoughts that I would have. I think a significant component to buy-in is clarity. A leader may not always be able to give or to provide certainty when a vision is cast, but what we can provide is clarity. I love the wisdom of an old sage who said, and I've been trying to think who it was or where I heard it from, but he said, when trouble hits, go slow, but be clear. I have on my phone a whole list of leadership quotes that I heard, and at some point I put this one in. I remember somebody told me this about his grandpa, the advice that his grandpa gave. I don't have a clue who it was, but I think it's powerful advice. When trouble hits, go slow, but be clear. I love it. 33 years of church leadership has taught me that congregational buy-in is often possible on almost any initiative when a clear course is charted. The more work you put in on the front end of a new initiative, the less pushback you'll get on the backside. I think they call it the meeting before the meeting, right? The more prepared you are and the better you are equipped to cast the vision, the less pushback you're going to get. A number of years ago, our church faced something that had the potential literally to blow us apart. It was very volatile. And we as a leadership spent hours and hours. And by God's grace, as we presented this, we gave them a 16-page document that we compiled. And by God's grace, as that was presented to the congregation, there was not near the retribution of the potential of that it had to put blow us apart. And so I just think that clarity is so important. There's a second component that I would suggest that you probably may not have thought about, but I would suggest that buy-in is also, you also get buy-in when there is kindness. You don't need to be a bull in the china shop, kind of a leader, to redirect the curve. In fact, thoughtless aggression can actually be your greatest enemy. At the same time, when those standing at the helm cast a new vision, it will require tenacity on their part. Don't waver in your mission, but do it with kindness. It goes a long way. My co-pastor, Keith, who we've worked side by side for many years, has said this over and over. Leadership requires thick skin and a soft heart. And I think that sums it up quite nicely. Kindness goes a long way. When you're not defensive, when you allow the person to ask any question that they want, in fact, you invite the questions, and you sit down and have a dialogue. You can't go on your emotions. If I would have done what I wanted to do at that breakfast meeting, I could have lashed. But you won't get anywhere. When you invite people to speak into the situation, and you do it with kindness, there's something that transpires, I think, that works towards buy-in from people. There's probably many other things that we could mention. Those are two of them that come to my mind. The fourth and the final process, after we embrace present reality and we embrace personal responsibility and we embrace potential resistance, there is yet a final process that I would submit to you, and that is that we must embrace proactive reform. I heard a quote recently that says, the culture of an organization is only as strong as the leaders who lead it. It's only as strong as the leaders who lead. And I couldn't agree more. Healthy cultures never happen by accident. It requires intentionality. Leaders with a hands-off mindset do not wake up one day and say, "Wow, we have an amazing culture. How did we get here?" No, it doesn't happen that way. In fact, just the opposite, just the opposite. Unhealthy organizational cultures, however, can be reformed. Unhealthy organizational cultures can be reformed when her leaders become, I use the word, custodians of the institution's mission, vision, and values. And by the way, most organizations have these guiding statements in their policy books somewhere, yet many of them I've found have no clue what it says. How many here this morning could quote to me what your mission, vision, and values are of your policy, that's in your policy? Raise your hand. Listen, you must know them. You know that where there is, you know, where there's no goal, where there's no vision, you hit that target every time, right? There is none. And I really believe that is a huge threat to any organization. I would propose that the single greatest factor in effecting change is when her shepherds are unequivocally clear on its guiding statements and that these values offer a compelling vision. When you have that, you have something that you're working toward. It's not enough to write them down once and expect it to stick for the next 25 years. Far too many boards operate on vision and value statements that were written 20, 25 years ago, which fosters stagnation and pushes the org into the decline side of the bell curve. Regrettably, that's where we found ourselves as the UCS board. When we actually went back and says, what is the mission here? What did it say? We found that the original vision that was cast, the mission that was cast, the mission statement that was cast for the school was very relevant for that day. But something had shifted in 50 years. A lot had shifted in 50 years. And the mission had shifted and changed. And so we can't expect to write these and just put them in our policy and try to keep the wheel turning when we don't know what it really is that we're working toward. Leaders must be the big picture wardens, then transmit this mandate to the associates in the organization, which would be our staff, our administrator and staff. So the question that we probably have is, how are proactive reforms implemented? And again, there's probably a lot of different answers we can give. I'm going to submit to you two of them, two considerations that I would offer you. First of all, I think it is of utmost importance that you be clear on what you create and what you allow. We were in a meeting, my wife and I were in a meeting with a couple several weeks ago. And after we came away from that meeting, a term came to my mind, and I said, that's it. Healthy organizations are full of what I call multiple intangibles, which is a combination of things that are both guarded and created by her leaders. It's the mixture of things you can't necessarily put your finger on, yet when you step into its environment, you know immediately that there's something very different, something very special that stands in stark contrast to similar organizations. Let me explain what I mean. I'm not a fast foods kind of a person. In fact, I typically avoid them at all costs. And the reason is very simple. It puts a terrible strain on my Christian virtue to witness the loathsome, dysfunctional work ethic and the not so healthy product that they offer. It seems that in recent years, fast food places have put a new definition to the word fast. When you wait 15 or 20 minutes for your fast foods, that in my mind isn't fast. So I basically avoid them for the most part, except for one. Which one is that? Chick-fil-A. Why? Well, the reason is very simple. Because her leaders have created a standard by which they operate, starting with the CEO, and it trickles down all the way to the lowest paid employee, that is driven deep into the culture. Notice the guiding statements on the back of your worksheet there. And the difference between the competitor, okay? And we'll just leave it there. Their culture has not only been developed by what they have created, it is also formed by what is allowed. What is allowed is equally important. Some influences that come into our church or into our school, they can surface in the org, and it was not necessarily created by her leaders. However, the leader must determine whether they will allow it to continue because it will shape your culture. Now, it could be a good thing, and if it is, then we allow it, right? If it's not so good, then we must say, no, 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 no. That is not where we're going to go. It's a combination of both what is created and allowed. There's a second force that I think shapes our culture, and that is also what is valued. Why? Because what we value determines what we do. I'll give you an example of that. I just got done talking about Chick-fil-A. I work for a business that has approximately somewhere between 65 to 70 employees. Several years ago, the boss took each of the employees, they divided us up in about 12, groups of 12, and he took us up to South Bend, and he paid for our lunch, and he said, now I want you just to take note of how Chick-fil-A operates. Notice how fast, well, this is one thing that I observed. As I sat there and I looked out the window and I saw how fast the people or the cars moved through the pickup window. It was amazing. And they were backed out onto the road and even up the street a little bit. And they just circulated those cars through. Why did he do that? Because he valued their vision of what they offered. What we value determines what we do. Or said another way, what we believe determines how we behave. Craig Rochelle says, if you want a different culture, change what you value. You show me a struggling or an inefficient ministry, and I will show you an organization with unclear or unhealthy values. If the value is survival, it will be inward-looking and risk-averse. If the organization is stingy, the budget will be tight and squeaky. If the leaders have a hands-off mindset, it will be difficult to retain high-quality, long-term employees because the best workers desire to be part of something that knows where the organization is going. They want to be part of something that is going somewhere. But the opposite is also true. If the organization values excellence, a standard will be raised that will set the bar high. It will not be afraid to invest money to improve facilities. Quite a number of years ago, we had a brother on the board that was so instrumental in redirecting our thinking and how we need to invest into the facilities. It will also pay higher wages for quality staff. So much appreciate our board treasurer who's here today. And of all the board members, he probably says the least. And I always watch him because there's a unique tension, right, between the board members casting vision and what the budget says we can do, right? And so it seems like we're always pushing him right to the limit. And I love his response when we ask him, is this something we can do? And he'll be quiet for a moment. Then he'll turn to us and says, yes, yep, I think we can do this. That's so encouraging. And sometimes the way isn't even completely clear. But as we together believe that this is an initiative that we want to project, we trust the Lord to provide in ways, and He has. He's opened the doors in ways that we just had never anticipated. If the organization will guard what behaviors are allowed and what is not allowed, It will guard the behaviors of what is allowed and what is not allowed, and it will also keep all lines of communication open at all levels of operation. What we value determines what we do. You show me a strong, effective, growing organization, and I will show you a group of people unified around a clearly stated set of values. Well, I trust that as you shepherd your schools, that you would sense the calling that Brother Jonathan, who by the way is our board chairman, has put before you, that you would take this calling seriously, and that you would have organizations and schools that are healthy and strong and effective for the kingdom. God bless.